It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Ashton Mara. Ever heard of a Sanger? A new reality show is bringing the Appalachian term to the world's attention.
Ginseng's the most beautiful plant in the mountains because it turns into money.
But is this TV show presenting the truth about hunting ginseng? That story coming up on West Virginia Morning. First, this news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. An overwhelming majority of Crimeans have voted to break away from Ukraine and join Russia. Crimean authorities claim 96% of those voting opted to secede, but the U.S. and other Western nations have declared the referendum illegal. NPR's Gregory Warner reports the voting was conducted under armed guard.
The numbers were high because many pro-Ukrainian Crimeans boycotted the referendum, saying the ballot gave them no option to vote to maintain the status quo of Crimea as part of Ukraine. Activists documented irregularities, including voting by children and lax requirements that allowed people to vote multiple times. Russian biker gangs and armed self-defense units patrolled polling stations. But despite seeming voter inflation and the show of force, exit interviews indicated that most people did vote to join Russia, whether for perceived higher salaries, better social programs, or a longing for the Soviet Empire. The Ukrainian government says that the vote, organized by a self-appointed Crimean prime minister whose nickname in criminal circles was the Goblin, was illegitimate and unconstitutional. Crimea says it'll make a formal request today to Russia to be annexed to its territory. Gregory Warner, NPR News, Simferopol.
Australia has taken the lead in the search for the missing Malaysian plane. Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 has been missing since March 8th. Investigators are now concerned the plane was possibly hijacked. The BBC's Jennifer Pack reports some of the focus is on the two pilots.
Captain Zahari Ahmad Shah, a gentleman who has had a flying career spanning three decades, said to be good-hearted, a good chef, and an all-around nice guy. There's lots of people online now defending his character, his relatives, his friends coming out that they don't believe he was involved in the disappearance of this flight. Same goes for his co-pilot, who is much younger, Mr. Farik Abdul Hamid, 27 years old, who has been flying with Malaysia Airlines since 2007.
The BBC's Jennifer Pack reporting. The Army says it will drop sexual assault charges against a general under a plea deal announced yesterday. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports Brigadier General Jeffrey Sinclair is expected to enter new pleas when his court-martial reconvenes this morning in North Carolina.
General Sinclair is expected to plead guilty to lesser charges in exchange for the dropping of the far more serious charges of sexual assault and two other counts that might have required him to register as a sex offender. Sinclair is accused of assaulting a female captain under his command on two separate occasions. Earlier this month, a 27-year Army veteran pleaded guilty to having improper relationships with two other subordinate officers. He also pleaded guilty to adultery, which is a crime in the military. The deal marks the end of a closely watched case that unfolded as the military continues to deal with sex crimes within the ranks. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Ashton Mara. It's 7:33. Negotiations between the House, Senate, and governor broke down during the extended budget session last week over two issues: how much money should be returned to the General Revenue Fund from the Attorney General's Consumer Protection Account, and how much should be dedicated to the Aged and Disabled Waiver Program. On Friday, members of the legislature were able to finally approve a budget for the upcoming fiscal year. After its passage, lawmakers convened for a special session focused on the bills that got lost in the chaos of the final night almost a week before. The list of bills on the special session call included two supplemental appropriations bills necessary for funding programs through the end of this fiscal year, and former House Bill 4333, or the haircut bill, which redistributed excess lottery funds. The bill calls for a 10% reduction in the funds to help balance the general revenue budget and pulls a combined $21 million from the Infrastructure Development Council and the Casino Modernization Fund. But on top of that, the bill puts a variety of lottery-funded items under the purview of legislative appropriations. That means instead of the lottery writing the check for these programs, the legislature will instead, giving them more knowledge of the money in the accounts. The governor's deputy chief of staff, Jason Pezzatella, explained the concept during a Senate finance meeting Friday afternoon.
And I think it was Senator Hall's question earlier where he asked, well, how much is in those individual buckets? And the short answer to that is we don't know, because they're not in the state's accounting system, because they're not subject to appropriation. What this bill does is it will take everything that's in yellow in the bottom right-hand corner of your chart and will put it in the state's accounting system, which is called FIMS, because every account that's appropriated by the legislature is in that system. So you'll know every day up to the minute exactly how much is in that account.
The bill was ultimately approved by both houses. Also lost on the last night of the regular session, a bill regulating the drill cuttings from hydraulic fracturing sites being disposed in commercial landfills. The bill went to conference committee, but lawmakers ran out of time before putting it to a vote. The version of the bill introduced by the governor during the special session, however, was a result of that conference committee's work. The seven landfills currently applying for a permit to accept the waste will be the only allowed to apply for 2 years. Those landfills must build separate cells by the fall of this year and cease mixing the drill cuttings with municipal waste. The bill passed both chambers and heads to the governor for his signature. It was a bill allowing counties to give some elected officials a pay raise, however, that received the most debate during the special session, particularly in the House. The bill calls on the state auditor to certify a county can financially handle the raises for clerks, sheriffs, commissioners, and others before signing off on the 12% increase. The funds, however, all come from county revenue. No money is promised by the state for the increase. Delegates tried to amend the bill on the floor, first calling for the raises to take effect in 2017, after the next election, and second, calling for a vote of the people before giving the raises. That amendment was proposed by Delegate Patrick Lane.
We already allow our citizens to exercise their vote on important issues that affect them locally and close to home, and I think this is just an extension of that effort. If the county has the money in the budget, and if the voters of that county believe that their local county officials have earned that pay raise, then they can vote yes on the May primary. I think that it's an important step to allow the local voters to determine whether or not their local officials have earned this pay raise.
Both amendments were rejected, though, and the House and Senate passed the governor's proposed version of the bill. Also passing both chambers Friday, a bill addressing local share for county schools. The bill says the tax commissioner will appoint a special assessor in counties who underassess properties 2 years in a row. It also takes away the large penalties school boards currently have to pay when the state finds it has underassessed those properties. You're listening to West Virginia Morning on West Virginia Public Radio. It's 7:38. Snow, sleet, or freezing rain possible today. Highs in the 20s and 30s. For a full list of school closings and delays, you can visit our website, wvpublic.org.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the West Virginia Symphony Orchestra's Montclair String Quartet with Lucky 7 at the University of Charleston, March 23rd. Details at wvsymphony.org.
West Virginia's got a rich history of young people involved in the science fields, many using rocket science to fulfill their dreams. A group of students from North Central West Virginia is hoping a rocket will also launch them to the top. Ben Aduccio reports.
There are five students in North Central West Virginia who are building a rocket to launch in the Team America Rocketry Challenge competition. This competition entails sending a rocket 825 feet into the air, which will hold two raw eggs inside of it. The rocket must come down within a certain time period, almost 50 seconds, and the eggs can't break. Simple, right? Well, actually, no. But a very special machine is helping these students. It's a three-dimensional printer housed at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration's facility in Fairmont.
One thing that increases accuracy, dramatically reduces altitude, is an asymmetrically airflow fit.
Student and team member Jack Thompson explains what the printer is doing.
I designed and sent to the printer an altimeter mount. An altimeter is used for calibrating how high your rocket has gone, determining by the change of pressure in the atmosphere. It'll take about 4.5 hours to complete this entire altimeter mount. We're going to put it in our rocket we're working on building at the moment.
Thompson and I were standing 3 feet away from the printer while it was making this model, and it felt as if we were standing next to an oven. It's heating up to more than 200 degrees Celsius, but it's absolutely vital in giving these students a working model of parts for their rocket they will be launching. The students are using NASA software to basically design models of rockets with specific measurements, and then they can print off different parts with the printer. Student Luc Perret, the newest member of the team, says he loves working with it.
Well, I'm learning how to build these rockets, and I like the 3D printer a lot. I think that's pretty cool. And, yeah, I think it's really cool that he just sort of invited us, that, like, we could come and just play around with it at any time. That's really amazing.
The team is called the Scienceers, and one person who is helping them is Todd Ensign, a NASA program manager for an education resource center. Ensign works with students all over the state who enter rocket competitions. He says West Virginia in recent years has seen a growth in interest in rocket competitions, and that's a very good thing.
Last year, we had 29 teams competing, and 5 of those teams, the first time ever in West Virginia's history, made it to the Nationals. They were in the top 100, the best 100 teams in the nation, and they got to go out to Washington, D.C. and compete. And some of those teams were right from here in Fairmont. We had 2 teams from North Marion High School, they did very well. We had, in fact, had Gilmer County High School make it to the 16th place in the nation.
Ensign believes the benefits of doing this kind of work are absolutely limitless.
And I personally believe that competitions like this provide a gateway for students to delve so much deeper than they ever could during their school studies, during the limited time they have to study science, and they really don't have engineering courses. They don't have an opportunity to use the type of software and tools that we have here, but they get to apply all of that and really dig deep.
Ensign gives some advice to the students.
The location of this line, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then it's 6.5 from the edge of this line to the center of the circle on the right side.
It's actually 2.5, isn't it?
Yeah, 2.5.
The student Ensign is talking to is Caroline Thompson, Jack's sister. She says the students tried to win last year, but their rocket fell on a road causing its eggs to crack. This time around, they are doing something different.
This year we have a foam case, I guess is how you want to say it, that we took a big piece of foam and we carved it out to fit the eggs. And so the eggs go in one on each side. We tried bubble wrap in the beginning, but the bubble wraps was so big because we didn't have the small bubble wrap that it actually, we had to kind of pop the bubbles to get it to fit in the rocket, and then the eggs broke in the launch.
These students come from different backgrounds. Jack Thompson, for instance, he wants to be a ballet dancer. He's only 16, and he's receiving offers from different places for his services.
If you're a teenager and you don't think you're ever going to use math or science in your life, it's crazy how reality can kind of kick you back into gear and make you realize that everyone uses it at some point in their life.
The team must launch its rocket before the end of the month, and if its scores are strong, it can qualify for the national competition. That takes place in May in Virginia. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Fairmont.
The History Channel featured a new show this year that focused on ginseng in Appalachia. According to Nielsen ratings, the show, called Appalachian Outlaws, was one of the most popular on cable channels, averaging over 2.7 million viewers per each of its 6 episodes. There's no official word if season 2 is in the works, and while some fans are hoping that there will be a second season, other people are hoping the show will just go away. Glennis Board reports.
Some of us knew that there was gold in our own hills, and it grew right up under our feet. We just had to know where to look. Ginseng's the most beautiful plant in the mountains because it turns into money. People will steal for it, steal it. Some bitch shoots you and kill you over it. Ever who controls the ginseng controls the mountains. I want it all.
Well, that's how history, formerly the History Channel, is selling its show Appalachian Outlaws.
It's another reality-esque, loosely unscripted TV show brought by the same network that airs American Pickers and Vikings. While many viewers are intrigued by the characters and drama, others think the show is downright irresponsible, and people who hunt ginseng, known as sangers, and other experts agree that there are plenty of inaccuracies. Carrie Johnson is a sanger from McDowell County who's been hunting ginseng for years. He says some of the big money shout out in the show for freshly dug sang is misleading.
Anybody paid $550 for a pound of daggone sang, it's green. They got more damn money than they got cents.
Big day, big day. We got to come up with 200 pounds of fresh ginseng. That's a lot of fresh for 1 week, but the prices I'm paying on this stuff, we're all going to make money.
Dry is worth a lot more than green. I sold, like I said, a pound and 2 ounces. The last that I sold was $978. And a guy up there bought in a pound of green, wasn't nothing, $250. So.
He also has his doubts about how much ginseng some of the characters are actually harvesting.
Yeah, they going out digging 5 pound in a day or so. That's bull. It took me 2 months just to find 4 pound.
You know, there's such an amazing story to be told, and instead they're glorifying individuals going out and poaching on public lands, on private lands.
That's Susan Leopold, executive director of the United Plant Savers.
That doesn't really serve any purpose other than trying to portray negative behavior to get ratings. And I think it sets a terrible precedent.
Her organization's mission is to protect native medicinal plants of the United States and Canada. Together with American Herbal Products Association, she sent a letter to A&E Networks, which owns History, imploring them to, quote, correct the record, close quote, by including additional conservation information for viewers. But let me catch you up. What is ginseng? Wild American ginseng has been harvested from North America since the 1700s. Demand for the plant's root comes from Asia, where plants like ginseng have been used medicinally for over 2,500 years. And yes, we're talking serious demand. A pound of quality dried ginseng can easily sell for $400 to $900. But that's wild ginseng, or wild simulated, which means it's been grown under watchful eyeballs in forested areas where it would naturally grow, if it had the chance. The upshot is that the plant is at risk. It's been declining in numbers, and it faces a lot of threats. In fact, it's listed alongside things like ivory and shark and mahogany on CITES, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, an international agreement between governments which exists to protect species against over-exploitation through international trade.
There's a variety of different pressures on American ginseng. Some of it is certainly due to collection pressures, but there are also other types of pressures, both man-made and natural, such as invasive species, white-tailed deer, land conversion, exploration for minerals and gas, and that sort of thing.
That's Eric Burkhart. He's the plant science program director at Shavers Creek Environmental Center at Penn State University. He's been studying ginseng for over a decade.
So this is listed under CITES, as are a number of other products, including animal parts, such as ivory. And I find it difficult to believe that there would be a show that the History Channel or any other major U.S. network would choose to film that glorifies the poaching and killing of animals so that the ivory can be traded into China or wherever it's going to end up and portray it as some sort of entertainment value.
Burkhart and Leopold are both disappointed by the show. They say History missed an opportunity to educate viewers by focusing solely on entertainment. They and many academics and conservationists are worried that the culture of flouting rules and regulations will tear at the fabric of their work to conserve and preserve the plant and the forest that enables the plant's existence.
The silver lining here is that it has generated a lot of interest in American ginseng, for better or for worse. And a lot of the positive interest has been coming in through people contacting me for information, not only about collecting, but more importantly, in my mind, people are interested in growing the plant, figuring out how they can establish a patch on their own forest lands and grow it for income and for conservation.
No word on a reply to Leopold's letter to A&E Network on spreading the word about conservation, inspiring concern, and promoting sustainable practices. But hey, that's what PBS is for, right? For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Ashton Mara.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by WVU Children's Hospital, serving the healthcare needs of all West Virginia's children, located at Ruby Memorial Hospital. Online at WVUKids.com.